Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Junkyard Dogcast. I'm your host, Jordan Hill. Got the whole crew with us, Kip Adams and Benjamin Wolk, on this Tuesday afternoon. A lot to talk about, guys. A busy week last week with several dogs in Indianapolis. Talk about that. Talk about spring practice just being 1 week away as we record this. I don't know if you guys find that as hard to believe as I do. Talk about Kirby Smart going on the late kick with Josh Pate. Talk about what stood out from that conversation. And we'll try to kick Georgia men's basketball as far back in this podcast as we possibly can. Let's start with what was some news on Monday, guys. Another Georgia player going in the transfer portal. A veteran offensive lineman, Chad Lindbergh, has entered the portal. A guy that never played a ton while he was at Georgia. I believe he played in 22 games over the course of his time in Athens. A veteran piece, a guy that I think provided pretty good depth for this team. Kip, any thoughts on Chad Lindbergh's decision, especially at this point in the year with spring practice right around the corner?
Hey, man, congrats to him for getting his degree. He's going into this portal with two national championship rings, something you know most players can't say they have. And I think we knew that Georgia wasn't at the number yet, and we get asked that on a daily basis on the Junkyard, and we know that number really doesn't matter until fall camp, if ever. But we knew that as of now, Georgia was over the 85 scholarship roster limit. There was going to be more attrition. So Chad decided to go ahead and get out in front of it. You know, as a graduate transfer, he's able to do that. And I think now, you know, you're still going to have, a couple more guys leave by the time spring football is over. And as for Georgia, it does come in a position where they do have some depth. I mean, regardless of whether he's listed as a tackle or a guard, I mean, they still have eight offensive tackles or, you know, with the incoming guys who could project to offensive tackle and then get seven guards on the roster. I mean, that's pretty solid depth. Any program would tell you that if you have 15 offensive linemen, not even counting your center, you're in pretty good shape. So, you know, it's a situation where snaps are going to be hard to come by, and this is his last chance. So go out there and get, you know, whatever playing time you can get to, continue your college football career. So good for Chad, and I think Georgia is going to be okay with this one.
Ben, any thoughts there on this departure?
Well, I think to Kip's point, we all wonder where the numbers are going to come from or how Georgia's going to get to the 85 number. And so this simplifies that. Also, to Kip's point, I think that, you know, Chad Lindbergh will probably be a intriguing. I mean, anytime that there's a Georgia player in the trenches that's entering the portal, I'm sure he'll become an intriguing option for a lot of other programs because, yeah, Georgia has the depth there on the offensive line that makes someone like Chad Lindbergh say, maybe I need to look elsewhere, but not many other programs in college football have that luxury. So I'm sure that he will be a hot commodity for a lot of other programs. From Georgia's standpoint, heading into the spring, I mean, I don't think it's that big of a blow just because of the depth that we've talked about and the fact that, you know, I was doing this exercise over this past week, like who's going to be playing where on Georgia's offensive line heading into the 2024 season. And there's just more people than five spots available, and Georgia's rotated in the past, but you really try and find those who are going to be the core five for Georgia's offensive line, and that's already a tough enough exercise to do. So, you know, that this makes matters easier in terms of figuring out Georgia's depth chart. And, you know, again, I think that there were probably some other guys that were going to be higher priority options for the Bulldogs on the offensive line this year.
We'll make sure and keep you guys up to date with where Chad Lindbergh winds up as he prepares for the 2024 season. Fellas, let's turn our attention back to last week, a very big spotlight for a number of Georgia players up in Indianapolis. 11 Georgia players went to the NFL Combine. I think you guys would agree that it was a pretty rousing success for these Bulldogs. A lot of guys stood out. A lot of guys made the most of the opportunity. I'm going to start with you, Kip. What was your big takeaways from the Bulldogs in Indianapolis? And if there was someone you thought helped their cause more than anyone else among the Georgia players, who would you give that nod to?
Well, starting off with the player that kind of helped his cause more than anyone else, I think for me, it would probably be Tyke Smith, just a guy that you knew that he made a lot of plays during his time at Georgia. You didn't really know where he was as far as his top end speed, but he goes out there and runs a 4.46. You know, just an incredible time, impressive time for any DB, but for safety, I mean, that kind of gives you the you take a look and say, hey, maybe this isn't a guy that I have to play that close to the line of scrimmage. Maybe he can play, you know, so cover high and get out there and just play the regular safety role at the NFL level. So for me, I don't know whether he like increased his stock to where he's going to crack like the third round or, you know, maybe early fourth, but I think he kind of lowered he raised his floor in terms of where I just think that now, like, he's not going to have to wait around to like the middle of the fifth anymore. I think fourth to fifth round, early fifth round is going to be right where he goes. And that's a great place to kind of solidify yourself, knowing that it just takes one team to really fall in love with you. You still have the pro day. You can kind of keep that 40 time. You don't have to run that again, which is not the case for some of the other Georgia players that will be participating at the pro day. There's going to be a lot of eyes on some of these other guys just because they didn't participate fully at the combine. But I think Tyke really kind of just, again, like I said, solidifies himself as he's going to hear his name called in the draft. And I think that's really big for him. And then, I mean, Ladd McConkey goes out there, runs a 4.39. He's just a guy that continues to just knock on the door. And I think that's where he is right now. He's just knocking on the door. And I think this wide receiver class is ridiculous. Maybe the deepest we've had in terms of first and second round guys. Just overall, you can get yourself a guy probably in the third round that would be, you know, pushing for the first round in other years. It was a great group out there, but I think Ladd showed he belonged in that group. He may not like have pushed himself to the front of the line, but if he's, you know, competing out there with Troy Franklin, Xavier Worthy, and then, you know, just A.D. Mitchell, those guys, he's going to have a chance to be a first-round pick. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs at 32 are probably going to pick a wide receiver. That's an opportunity for Ladd to be one of those guys because I think he checks every box for them. He can play outside receiver, and he looked outstanding in the drills as well. So I just think, again, this is a guy that we all talked about, like, where is this draft stock going to be? And I think right now you could say he has a chance to be a first round pick in the NFL draft. And that's just one of those final feathers in Kirby Smart's cap to have a first round wide receiver and have a guy that you basically just plucked right out there at the end near signing day would guy, Tennessee fan. You know, we're going to continue to bring that up. You know, grew up a Tennessee fan and give him a look. And Kirby Smart and that coaching staff did. And now he has a chance to have a first round wide receiver pick come out of that development. So it's just another good sign for Georgia's program, for Kirby Smart's development, but really for Ladd McConkey just to come in and prove that he belongs with these elite wide receivers in this class.
We're going to make sure and mention some of Tyke's numbers: 4.46 40, 36 inch vertical, 10 foot broad jump. I mean, really made the most. And Ladd McConkey, I think it was Daniel Jeremiah, shared his measurables and how he had participated and what he was able to do in Indianapolis, compared him to Garrett Wilson. And I think that raised a lot of eyebrows and made people go, oh. And, you know, I would go ahead and encourage people, you know, keep an eye out and keep an ear out when he is drafted. The sound you're going to hear is people bumping that thread from when he committed to Georgia over on the Junkyard. You know that that's going to happen. But, yeah, I mean, Ladd deserves a lot of credit for how he was able to do what he was able to accomplish when, again, a lot of people count him out. A lot of people don't give him the credit that he deserves. Ben, do you have any thoughts on how things played out in Indianapolis? Anyone that particularly caught your eye among these Bulldogs?
Well, I would completely agree with Kip on Tyke Smith. I'd say his 40-yard dash was probably the most surprising testing number for me. And I don't know specifically how he tested when he was running 40s throughout the time that he was at Georgia. But I think that if there was a knock about Tyke Smith's game, it probably would have been top end speed. And does he have that elite speed? And for him to post a 40 time faster than Javon Bullard's, and that's not a knock on Javon Bullard, who also broke the 4.5 mark, but the fact that he ran the faster of the two times was just surprising to me. I did not expect that out of the two of them. And then, you know, I've harped on Ladd McConkey multiple times over the last few podcasts where we've talked about this. I don't think it was surprising to any of us what the times that he put up, the vertical leap that he did. If anything, he probably his vertical leap was maybe a little shorter than I would have expected it to be. But I think for him, when he's doing the gauntlet drill, Twitter was just blowing up about how smooth he looks as he's doing everything. And I think that was really a showcase moment for everyone at the NFL level to see what we've all been able to see for the last several years. It's, you know, Ladd McConkey is one of those guys where when you really just sit there and watch him, it's very obvious. It doesn't take a lot of, you know, creative thought to say, oh, Ladd McConkey's a really good wide receiver. But it feels like it's something that takes creative thought because of some of the narratives around him. And I think that Kip's exactly right. He has a chance to break that first round wide receiver narrative for Georgia. And I think there's something poetic about the fact that Ladd McConkey, of all the wide receivers that it could have been, that could be the one that breaks that first round narrative. I mean, Georgia struggled to get five-star receivers in recent recruiting cycles. And if the three-star wide receiver that Georgia almost didn't want and Tennessee didn't want, if he's the guy that ends up being the first round wide receiver that breaks some of those narratives and allows Georgia to get back into some of those five-star recruitments at wide receiver a little bit more than they have in the past, I think that there's, I've already said the word, but I think that there's something poetic about the fact that Ladd McConkey could be the guy that does that. But I think, for me, I know that he ran a pretty good 40, and then there were some not true testing numbers out there about Amarius Mims. But one thing that I said when we talked about it pre-combine was, you know, Georgia has a few of these types of guys. Darnell Washington was like this when he was at Georgia, but Amarius Mims was like this, where when you see him and you stand up close to him, you almost feel like you're not standing next to someone who's the same species as you, because he is an alien. I mean, Amarius Mims does not look like anybody else. Even other Georgia offensive linemen that they have that are big physical guys, Amarius Mims is just a totally different guy. And I think you saw that show up in some of his measurements. I mean, his hand is basically a ruler. I think he's almost 87 inch wingspan, you know, and even so, even at 6'8", 340, you still see him and you're like, man, he just feels even bigger than that to me, just because of, you know, how he looks. And so for him to go out and run, I think it was a 5.07 in the 40, got banged up. And so he didn't, you know, I think it was a 4.33 shuttle time that was out there that was not accurate, that was associated with him. I'm sure he still would have put up something freakishly impressive, but I think that just getting in front of people and, you know, NFL teams and scouts and media being able to say, oh, this is Amarius Mims. He is different than every other offensive lineman that's out there, I think was really, really important to him. I will add one other note. I know that I was out on vacation, so I wasn't as attentive to everything as I'm sure the two of you were throughout the course of the end of last week during the combine. But I saw some murmurs out there about Brock Bowers not interviewing well, and obviously he didn't go through tests and things like that. And I just want to use this platform to say anybody who says anything about Brock Bowers' interviews and those being a reason why he should not be a top 10 draft pick, I am just 100% totally discrediting right here, right now, because Brock Bowers does not like to talk to people. That's just something that we know. Kirby Smart alluded to it when he made him one of his SEC Media Days representatives, and he said, I wanted to make Brock squirm a little bit and just see how he reacts to all of it. And Brock Bowers is a football player. He likes to play football. He likes to work. He likes to do all of the things associated with football. And I just think that the combine is not something that is, you know, Brock Bowers' cup of tea. I'm sure that he embraced it as much as he could. And I'm sure that some of the, you know, oh, he didn't interview well stuff that came out there had more to do with some of the, you know, awkwardness or whatever you might describe it as that we've seen at times from Brock Bowers. But I find it ridiculous that anybody who has paid any attention to Brock Bowers the last 3 years would, you know, take his not, you know, extreme openness or, you know, maybe being a little bit awkward at times in some of those interviews. If you're using that as your criteria to judge Brock Bowers, you're probably not going to be within having a job in the NFL in the next couple of years. So I think you'd be wise to probably throw on the film and use that as how you're grading Brock Bowers and how you put him on your draft board.
I'm going to assume that the person who's saying that about Brock Bowers is Arthur Smith, just simply because, one, you mentioned not having a job in a few years. I think that probably fits him to a T, but also just the fact that last year, Peter Skoronski from Northwestern mentioned that Arthur Smith said that he was boring him right now because of his generic answers and how boring his answers were. And I think Peter Skoronski went on to start 14 games for the Titans and will probably be their left guard for the next decade. And so I think that that's a reminder that, you know, the NFL gets it wrong, especially when you're associated with the Falcons. But I just think that you got to remind yourself that also C.J. Stroud had a bad test score last year. So there's a lot of aspects of this evaluation process where the data points completely cause these GMs to make horrible decisions. And Brock Bowers is probably going to benefit from that. If he falls out of the top 10 and goes to the Colts, to the Bengals, congrats to Brock Bowers. You're probably going to get a ring at the next level as well. So I don't think that's as big of a nothing burger as you can get. But I think we've given it a probably 2 to 3 minutes more time than Brock Bowers would give you if you asked him five questions. So that's just how it goes with him. We knew that, over our time covering him. Fans, if you don't know, Brock Bowers is he wants to get to the end of the answer as quickly as possible. He's usually pretty successful at that.
My thing too, I thought you were going to bring this up, Kip. Why would this not be a leak from a team that wants him to fall? I mean, right. That was sort of my thought. It was like the Bengals GM being like, yeah, this guy, man, he really,
Now that you mention it, I mean, the Steelers, you know, the man loves him a tight end. So I think the Steelers pick, I think, what is it, like 20th? So that was a nice try, Art. You're not going
to
get him.
Yeah, he's not going to 20, Art. Sorry.
Brock's mom shared one of those tweets about it with a GIF that said incorrect. So apparently she felt strongly that was not true. I did want to rattle through just a few of the other numbers of guys we have not mentioned for Georgia. I think we mentioned Javon Bullard. He had a 4.47 40. Kendall Milton, a 4.38 short shuttle. Kamari Laster, one of the fastest three-cone times, 6.62. So those were definitely worth mentioning. A lot of guys I do think did a very good job of making the most of the opportunity. Before we turn the page on this, you know, a few of the guys I believe Dejon Edwards was one of them. Brock didn't participate at all in any of the drills. Kamari Laster, I don't believe, ran his 40. Some of these guys are waiting for Pro Day, which will be next Wednesday. And I want to ask this to you, Kip. How important does Pro Day become for some of those guys? Guys that showed up in Indianapolis, maybe participated in a few drills, or if you're Brock Bowers, didn't participate at all, and are now sort of putting some stock in what they're going to do in Athens once some NFL personnel come to town to watch Pro Day.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Kamari Laster. I think that's kind of the biggest one. I was personally bummed because I was just intrigued, wanted to see, you know, what his 40 would be. I know that's just one drill, but it's still one where you still kind of have a question with Kamari, where, you know, that high end, top end speed, where does he fall? And, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag at cornerback this year. He has a chance to kind of go to the top of that group, and, you know, maybe wasn't there yet. Maybe he kind of knows his time and is just not going to get it, not going to run it. But I mean, you have a chance to kind of fight there at the end of the first round, I think there's probably going to be 5-6 cornerbacks taken in the first round. You're battling Kool-Aid McKinstry, Ennis Rakestraw out of Alabama, Missouri, probably for the end of the first round. It's a big opportunity for him to kind of get in that mix with those guys and hear his name called on day one. I don't know if he's going to have a chance to work out, but I'm sure teams want to see Amarius Mims. And so that was really unfortunate, you know, with him on the first – after that second 40 with the hamstring. I think the quick turnaround, you know, might hurt him in that case. He might not be able to go out there and do the drills. But I think that's really when, you know, you only have so many starts under your belt. They want to see more of what you bring to the table. I still think he's going to go, 20 to 25. Like I said, with the Steelers, I think they're moving Broderick Jones to left tackle now. So I still – right there is where I could see him, you know, them having Georgia bookends and putting Mims there. So I don't think financially it's really going to matter for him. But, yeah, the guys that are kind of just fighting to get in there and hear their name called, period. You know, Zion Logue's going to have another opportunity. I think Marcus Rosemy, Jack Saint – you know, didn't run the 40, probably going to have some teams wondering, you know, all right, what do you bring to the table there? We just need to see where that floor is, you know, whether it's a mid 4.6, a 4.7, they just want to know so they can go ahead and check that box and put them on the board. So I think it's going to be big for him. But, you know, for guys like Mims and even Bowers, I mean, we're talking a couple draft spots here, which there is money involved, but those guys are going to be first rounders regardless. So I don't really think it's going to have that big of a, you know, an impact on where things go. And I think overall in this draft class, these guys have put up enough film to where most of these teams have really good evals on these guys.
Take a quick break, come back, talk a little bit about where recruiting stands at this point in the year, and look ahead to next week when the Georgia Bulldogs are back on the practice field.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob? Well, all
right. Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year. You dig? Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am ready.
Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
Ben, you hit the ground running back from a little bit of a break and just in time for the quiet period in college football recruiting. Get us up to speed on where things are right now with Georgia recruiting this point in the year, and just what fans have to look forward to in the weeks and months to come.
Yeah, well, Georgia right now has five commitments in the 2025 class. That's running back Bo Walker. That's tight ends Elias Williams and Ethan Barbour. Defensive lineman Justice Terry and linebacker Jaden Perlotti. As we know from watching last year's recruiting class unfold and how the new recruiting calendar sort of works out, these next 4 months are going to be critical for figuring out what Georgia's 2025 recruiting class ultimately looks like. I actually put out my first mock class of the year earlier this morning, so definitely go check that out as well. I think it's got a good picture of what you can expect. It's not going to be completely bulletproof, but I do think it gives you a good idea of where Georgia stacks up with certain recruits at this point in time. Starting at the end of this week, the dead period will no longer. Georgia will be able to start hosting recruits on campus in March and April. Most of those visits, as you would expect, are going to be, you know, in tandem with spring practices, scrimmages, or the spring game over the next month or so. We do have a list on the Junkyard at Dogs 24/7 as well that has everybody that we know of right now, and we'll certainly be updating that throughout the month as well as new names materialize. Right now, looking at March 16th, I think that March 16th is going to be a really big recruiting weekend. That's the Saturday. I wouldn't be surprised if Georgia has some kind of scrimmage there, though I don't know their schedule specifically. But yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of the names that we've mentioned over the last several weeks and months are going to be on campus, and many of them haven't even formally scheduled specific dates yet. So some of those will be added over the next several weeks as well. But I think that by March 6th, you know, that March 16th date, there will already have been a few visitors between now and then, but I think that March 16th day is going to end up being a pretty significant one. I mean, throwing out a big name, five-star defensive lineman Elijah Griffin is someone that's already scheduled to be on campus that weekend. He's one of many, but I know that he's a name that all Georgia fans have been asking me about. What's going on with Elijah Griffin? Do we think that he's going to end up in Georgia's class? My answer at this time is yes. So just a little teaser for that mock class as well. He is someone that I do think is favoring Georgia right now, but he's just one of the many headliners that I would expect on campus for that weekend. Obviously, with the G-Day game on April 13th, that's going to be a big weekend that Georgia is going to try and emphasize getting guys on campus. That'll be one of the last April visit weekends that Georgia has. So I think that where they can, Georgia will try and get guys on campus for that G-Day weekend and then also have them scheduled for either the first or second official visit weekend of June to try and bookend getting them in last during this period and then first during the June window as well. But I think the big takeaway as we get into spring is just that Georgia's going to have a lot of recruits on campus over the next several weeks. They're going to have guys that they want to work out in person. There's going to be guys that they're going to try and push for early commitments on. And so, you know, there's just a wide array of different types of prospects and where they sit on Georgia's board right now. But I think that a lot of that is going to materialize, especially throughout March and early April.
Ben's mock class and the list of visitors scheduled, I would say that's worth the subscription at Dogs 24/7 alone. Very, very good work there. And I know that especially that scheduled list of visitors, it's going to grow as we go forward in March and into April. Kip, how important is this time of year in recruiting for really any team? Trying to get these guys on campus, trying to make impressions, not only with 2025 guys, but guys beyond that they eventually want to come and play for their team.
Yeah, it's kind of a combination because the coaches are out on the road. This is the, you know, the spring eval period. This is where a lot of those air quote offers go out to get guys to camp. You know, they want to evaluate these guys, but I mean, a lot of those evals turn to commitments. And I mean, you look at every year, the class is made up of a lot of guys they get in camp. I think last year you just look at what happened with the linebacker board. You know, they get Chris Cole on campus, they get, you know, Chris Jones on campus, and they love that both of those guys brought to the table. Sarrell's got, you know, all of his offensive linemen kind of in one fell swoop, but also you'll get a guy like Quintavious Johnson, you know, kind of on the radar. You know, he had, like I said, he had one of those air quote offers and then came in and blew him away. So we were just kind of left catching up and learning more about him. And lo and behold, like, you know, Ben goes and sees him and he's just like, yeah, God, this guy's built. This guy can play whatever position Georgia needs him to on defense, basically. That's how important this period is, just to make sure you get those guys on campus and just thinking to the last class, something that you can directly kind of look and see where the impact is. I mean, Justin Williams and Joseph Jonah Odonye, they basically, Georgia went to the top for both of them on one visit, you know, an unofficial visit, kind of just blew them both away, had them both talking commitment. And I mean, that's kind of just one of those that, I mean, we've talked about all these guys that in Georgia's number one class, but I don't think we really talked enough about the fact that Georgia landed those two guys basically with one visit out of the state of Texas, the number one linebacker in the country, a top 60 defensive lineman who, you know, physically on the hoof, it's like, okay, this guy looks like, you know, maybe another Jalen Carter type player, just physically speaking. At this time last year, everyone was wondering why is, you know, Georgia not getting Sammy Brown at linebacker. And, you know, again, like I said, it's how important these unofficial visits can be. We know how important June's going to be. June is now the December, basically, in recruiting, where everyone loads up their official visits. And, you know, seemingly that's when all the decisions are made, even though we still have the December signing period, where there's a whole nother layer of chaos added with the transfer portal. You know, never mind the fact that playoffs are going on. Everything's happening at once then, but somehow June is the month that we decided it's going to be the most important for high school recruits. And so this sets up to that. And I just think that right now you're going to figure out a lot about Georgia's recruiting board, because you're going to see who they're visiting, who they're getting in town to see practice, which guys pick Georgia to see on G-Day, since they're going to have to decide. Every school's going to have their spring game basically the same weekend every year, one or two weekends. So they're all competing there. You're going to learn a lot about where Georgia is on these prospects boards as well. So I just think over the next 2 months, we're going to have a much greater grasp on who's important for Georgia and who Georgia's important for. So I just think that it's a great time really to have Ben on board, because I mean, last year just kind of going in blind, but now, you know, we have the ability to track everyone and to give the folks at Dogs 247 a much greater look and vantage point of where things are for Georgia recruiting right now. And again, like I said, they're coming off a number one class and nothing's going to change. They're going to be right there in the mix for number one class again. We're not going to make any other claims as far as where this class is going to stand, because we know things are going to change, and they always do. But I do think that we're going to have some really big time recruits, you know, giving Georgia good news over the next couple of months. So I just think that this spring period is really intriguing. It's kind of where all the storylines kind of lock in, and we find out a lot more about all the guys that Kirby Smart wants on this team.
We can see clearly now that Ben is on board and we are going to stay woke. You can rest assured that will be the case. So, guys, we're going to talk a little bit about spring practice starting next week. I will say that a little bit later this week, we're going to come back, do another podcast, do our spring breakouts, and see who winds up putting together the best team among us. But with it a week away, I thought it was worth diving in just a little bit and getting a feel for what you guys are watching for, what you want to see in starting next week and then going through the next 5 weeks that follow. I'll start with you, Ben. What intrigues you the most about what is coming up for Georgia in spring practice? What do you want to see out of this team over the course of practice and ending up with G-Day?
Well, first and foremost, I want to see the transfer, the incoming transfers, when we, if you know, the rare opportunities that we get to be up close to them for, you know, brief periods of time. I want to at least get up close to them and see just physically how they look. I mean, obviously ETN is someone that's going to be a fascinating discussion throughout the entire spring, because there's a very good possibility that he is running back one this year, and he's someone that's brand new to the roster, and you don't see that very often at Georgia, where a guy is new to the roster and seems to be the likely candidate to be the top option at that position group. I'm also fascinated by the wide receivers. I've heard a lot about Colby Young so far this spring, and you know, being a 6'5", 215-pound wide receiver, I mean, I think that I want to just get my eyes on him. I've been able to watch Miami film and things like that, but I've never actually seen him up close and in person. So I think that that's something that I'm really, you know, looking forward to as well. Aside from the transfers, I would say the number one thing that I'm curious about is who's lined up next to Malachi Starks in the defensive backfield. I think that because Georgia pushed so heavily for Caleb Downs, it's pretty obvious at this point that Georgia would have really liked to pair Malachi Starks and Caleb Downs at safety. Now that that's not going to be the case, who is it that really steps up? Is it a, you know, is it one person? Is it a by committee approach that they take? Is it, you know, do they do it based on matchups? I think that a lot of that is going to be determined over the next several months as Dante Williams and Travaris Robinson get more familiar with the defensive backs and as they just get a little bit more familiar with how some of these guys have developed. I mean, I think that Dan Jackson is certainly an option for that spot. I think that Jake Pope is certainly an option for that spot. Janelle Aguero is someone that I think has split time between star and safety. His development this spring will probably dictate a lot that happens there. And then David Daniel is someone that sort of hung around in that role throughout the last couple of years. He's never been able to carve out a full-time starting role, but he's someone that's certainly going to try and push for that this spring. So just knowing that Georgia really knew coming into or coming out of last season, I think they realized, all right, we're going to have to evaluate every safety across the country and figure out, is one of these going to be able to come in and be a transfer for Georgia? I think it's clear at this point Georgia was going to go out and try and find a safety because they took Jake Pope and they still tried to take Caleb Downs later on in the cycle too. So I'm sure that's something that Georgia will be working out over the next several weeks. And that's probably something that's not fully come close to being determined yet, because I think these spring practices are probably going to determine a lot on that front.
I'm also going to throw out Ja'Cory Thomas, who I'm pretty sure tweeted, did everybody forget about me? Wasn't that something like he posted on social media?
And obviously he was right, because I just named like six people and I didn't include Ja'Cory Thomas, who I'm a huge fan of Ja'Cory Thomas's game. So if I'm forgetting Ja'Cory Thomas, there's probably a lot of people out there that are forgetting Ja'Cory Thomas, and you certainly shouldn't be.
Kip, what about you? What intrigues you the most about Georgia going into spring ball? Anything in particular you want to see out of this team in the practices to come?
Well, it's not something that we'll necessarily be able to have a tangible reaction to, but I mean, it's four new coaches on the staff. The first chance to see, I guess, you know, you'll get to see 5 minutes of them leading stretches throughout spring football. But I mean, just overall, hear from the players, you know, how they're, you know, interacting and how the any coaching differences you might have. But I want to see, let's see if Ellis Robinson's for real, man. I think that's kind of my biggest question. You mentioned safety. I'm thinking, well, who's going to take over for Kamari Lassiter? You know, a guy that just never got his name called the last couple of years because no one ever threw to him. People talk about, you know, whether or not he has elite ball skills. It's like you got to have the ball thrown, you know, actually have to make a play on the ball to have anything happen. But I think he's, you know, basically quieted his side of the field throughout his time at Georgia. Those are big, you know, those are big shoes to fill. And so, you know, I know that Julian Humphrey and Daniel Harris are going to be kind of competing. You can't lock in Dalen Everett, because even toward the end of the season, Julian Humphrey was kind of sneaking in there and getting some of those snaps before he got injured. So I don't think CB1 is settled. CB2 is obviously going to be a huge battle. Does Ellis Robinson just come in? And I mean, I know that, again, he's been talked about nonstop, the highest, you know, ranked cornerback Georgia's landed. But I mean, I think he matches up with the expectations, but still you want to see him come in and see what kind of impact he can make. And overall, just this number one overall recruiting class, who are going to be some of these impact guys, you know, because you have a three or four guys that step in and carve out an immediate role. And you know, I want to see some of these defensive linemen. I know offensive linemen, you know, often you need a year or two, but I mentioned him earlier, but Joseph Jono-Ojonge, I think, you know, he's young. The ceiling is just it's through the roof on him. So I just want to see how quickly he adapts, and you know, who else among this recruiting class can come in and maybe land some snaps early, especially on G-Day. You know, that's going to be an opportunity for them to kind of say, you know, we're deserving of you guys taking a closer look. I know that there are a lot of guys who've played very important football at Georgia still on this roster, but, you know, Kirby Smart's not afraid to play freshmen. And I think some of these guys are going to have him going to the coaching staff and saying, we got to find a way to get this guy on the football field.
For me, it's a position and sort of a situation I had honestly sort of forgotten about since the Orange Bowl, and it's where exactly Mykael Williams is going to line up this year. You know, there was a lot of talk going into the Orange Bowl about, hey, he may stand up more going forward. He may play more outside linebacker. He had done that at times this past season, being at outside linebacker every once in a while with Tramiel Walthour playing defensive end. He did it a decent bit in that Florida State game in that big win for Georgia. How much do we see of that in spring? And I'm just really curious to see how much they sort of tinker with that, because, you know, at this point in the year, spring is so valuable in terms of experimenting with things. You know, I wrote about it in some of my positional previews. When you look at offensive line, defensive line, I wouldn't be shocked to see several different guys among those starting five as those position coaches try to get a feel for who works best together or who is best to play at this position rather than that position. You know, could we see Mykael Williams standing up a little more and have Tyrion Ingram-Dawkins there at defensive end? Because I really liked what he showed last year. He had some really good games flashed in what he could do if he got a bigger role. So really fascinating to see, you know, how much we get to see of that. Georgia may be very coy with showing any of that. You know, we may not get to see a lot of number 13 standing up, but, you know, we might get to hear a little bit about that. And I think it's really interesting because, to me, it's sort of one of those things that sets off dominoes with, okay, he may play a little more outside. Does that mean a little less Chaz Chambliss? Does that mean Ingram Dawkins has a chance to start? To me, that feels like a really important piece on this defense with figuring out where Mykael is best suited to play this year. Wanted to make sure before we close out this episode to talk about Kirby Smart going on late kick with Josh Pate. A good interview one-on-one with Josh and Kirby. I believe it was about 25 minutes. If you have not watched it, I would recommend it. Really good stuff. Dove into a lot of stuff about the current landscape of college football, Kirby's relationship with Nick Saban, some of the other things going around the program, you know, the coaches that Georgia's lost this offseason and trying to get everybody up to speed with spring practice just right around the corner. I'm going to start with you, Kip. What stood out to you the most about that sit-down, what Kirby had to say, and sort of the outlook coming out of that interview, just what Kirby shared about where Georgia is?
Well, the one thing that kind of stood out to me initially was just him saying where he is in his coaching career. The fact that he said, I'm in the middle, you know. I'm kind of looking at it as I'm good to know that I'm not at the middle yet of my career, because I'm not sitting there at 48, but I'm not as far off as I'd wish I was. And he's talking about just the younger coaches and not feeling young anymore. And you start to kind of think, you know, everyone's asking, you know, now, you know, Saban's retired. The current storyline is talking about just coaches leaving for the NFL. And I mean, just the fact that the one thing that stood out after that first interview with Reese Davis after winning the national championship was them talking about something's got to change. We're losing coaches in the NFL. And he's just saying he's right there in the middle of his career. I just don't see him coaching until he gets anywhere close to Saban's age. And I think where he says he is kind of matches up with his contract. You look at start to see, you know, 2031. I think, you know, the contract where it is right now, I think fits probably with Kirby's timeline, just because, again, he's accomplished, you know, a lot already. But at the same time, he also hear him talking in that interview about still how motivated he is. So I think it kind of answers that is, you know, is Kirby losing a little bit of his motivation? No. He made it very clear about that, you know, he's still all day, every day, nonstop. But at the same time, he knows that that is going to catch up to him someday. And I just think that he's probably already got that plan, that timeline in place to where he's like, I think I can do this long. And I think probably another 7 to 8 years is probably where he's at. And then also just the fact that when he was asked about what he's focused on heading in the spring practice, and it was the like 100% Kirby answer, just depth in all positions. He said he's talked about offensive, defensive line depths, and he mentioned that NFL scouts mentioned they can't find any offensive linemen anywhere, and he said that's what we do here. We recruit offensive linemen. We get big guys. And that's like right when Kirby got to Georgia, that was the thing that he said needed to change. He's like, we got to get some size in here. And it's still a focus for him. They bring in 6 defensive linemen. They bring in 6 offensive linemen. They bring in more big people. And I think that his focus on establishing depth on both sides of the line of scrimmage tells you that he knows what's important. And it also just kind of goes back to that SC championship game with Alabama. I think he looked at that and said, you know what, there's room for improvement here. Let's see if we can beef up and get back to playing, you know, that what got us to back-to-back national titles.
For me, the biggest thing was listening to him talk about the current state of college football and really harping on the fact that his biggest issue with how things are right now is getting a feel for who's going to be on his team for the upcoming season. I mean, he really emphasized that, though. There needs to be a way for coaches to know who they're going to be coaching in the coming year. And he brought up, you know, when the team is like going through the college football playoff, that there becomes a point where the players who are going to leave have to go ahead and sign basically paperwork that says they're not coming back to open up opportunities for the newcomers. And, you know, he talked about that is really complicated, and that's hard for those players. They shouldn't be focused on that, but sort of with how the calendar has fallen and how things work, that's just sort of how it is. And I was not shocked when Kirby was like, hey, I don't want to get rid of any work. I'm going to work harder than anybody. You know, he made it a point to make it clear it wasn't about the amount of work they do. But, Kip, too, you hit on the other thing was him talking about offensive line, defensive line, trying to get more depth. I remember last year, and I'm sure it's been that way for years and years, that he was just talking about how they just did not have a whole lot of depth on the defensive line specifically. And, you know, we saw that have a few issues at certain points in the year, that they could have used another body. They could have used a Bear Alexander, who wound up leaving, you know, at the end of spring last year. So definitely a very interesting perspective that he provided, the thoughts that he shared. Ben, have you had a chance to watch the interview? Did you have any takeaways from what Kirby had to say?
Yeah, I mean, well, my big takeaway was that he thought Josh skipped their previous interview because he was partying too hard the night before. So that was probably my number one takeaway. Aside from that, I mean, the where Kirby is in his coaching career, I thought was a fascinating discussion, even though, you know, I don't know if he means the middle of his Georgia tenure or does he mean the middle of his overall coaching tenure? And that's exactly the gray area that Kirby probably wanted it to be in, just in case any recruits or their families were watching and listening to those conversations as well, just to make it clear that he's got plenty of time left. So those aren't necessarily important conversations in his mind. But I think my big takeaway was probably just Kirby Smart's mindset around the current, to your point, Jordan, state of college football, the calendar. You know, there's so much like whining and complaining going on. And I'm not saying it's not justifiable. Coaches are having to work their tails off right now. And I thought that it was, you know, Kirby Smart clearly has a lot of self-awareness to him when he talks about these types of things. I mean, he brought up the fact, you know, I make a lot of money in this business, and you know, it's hard for me to whine or complain about it because of that. But I just think it's very interesting that Kirby Smart is really looking at this from, you know, the highest altitude that he could possibly look at it, trying to understand how all of this affects his people. How does it affect his players that are trying to get through finals and practices and, you know, preparing for bowl games? And how does it affect his coaches? I mean, he mentioned on more than one occasion, he's trying to retain coaches. And so what does he have to do to adjust schedules during this time of year so that they don't feel overworked, so that when they get into March and April and June, when things are just going to be pure chaos, that they don't feel that they've been burned out earlier on in the spring and winter. And I just think that, you know, Kirby Smart says he doesn't want to be the face of college football. And I think he's right when he says that Nick Saban really has been the face of college football. And that's probably not even changed, even though that he's retired. I don't think that there is a clear-cut face of college football. But I do think that Kirby Smart has the mindset of college football that is required right now to say, yeah, things are tough. Things are not great all the time. We don't always know where things are trending when it comes to just about anything, but he does still embrace the work that is required to be successful. I mean, it is a burden to recruit at the level that he recruits at. It is a burden to manage the roster and retain staff and do all of the things that it takes to continue to be successful and have a winning program year after year after year. And I think just, you know, listening to Kirby Smart for 25, 30 minutes, I mean, we see it firsthand on a regular basis, but it felt like he sort of let his hair down a little bit and was kicked back and was willing to share some things that he maybe isn't otherwise sharing when he's standing at a podium with, you know, 30 people in the room. He was willing to say, look, things suck sometimes, but that's not going to change the way we work at the University of Georgia. And I think that for any college football program that is trying to figure out how do you work your way through these sort of trying times in college football, I think listening to how he talks about not just the work required, but the sort of mental health required to make it all sustain, I think was really important and interesting perspective from him, because I think that he probably better than anybody in college football knows what it was like, what it used to be like, and what it's going to be like now. And I think that he just has more foresight than a lot of people to try and figure out, okay, 2-3 years from now, what is this world going to be like? And how do we adapt now in preparation for that?
Again, if you have not watched that interview with Josh Pate, I would highly recommend you go over and check out Late Kick on YouTube and check that out. It was very much worth the time. Speaking of changes in college football, before we close out this episode, thought it was worthwhile to bring up some of the new proposals about what we could see in 2024. And the two big ones from the NCAA are allowing helmet communication between the coaching staff and the quarterback, and also implementing a 2-minute warning, much like you see in the NFL. I'm going to start with you, Ben. What do you make of each of these options for college football? Do you think it's a good thing? Do you think it's a bad thing? Are you indifferent about the potential to add both of these before next season?
Well, I think it was nice of college football to create a rule in Connor Stallion's honor immediately after Michigan wins a national championship. I think that he earned that. So I think the Connor Stallion's rule, you know, it may be more important than a statue. He gets an entire rule that will be thought of in his honor. But I'm curious to know how much people actually use the helmet communication. I think that it'll probably depend on certain teams and different offensive philosophies and things like that. Like, I'm sure there's still some value to doing signs and the way that they put in calls and the familiarity with how they've done that, that I don't know that it's just going to be an overnight change. Everybody's using the helmet communications, though I'm sure there will be some that will embrace it right away. When it comes to the 2-minute warning, I mean, I'm sure that it will change the end of games. I just don't know that I'm smart enough to necessarily realize specifically how it's going to change the end of games. Obviously, there's an extra, you know, timeout, I guess, that teams aren't going to have to use that will probably create some more late game intrigue or give teams with the ball a little bit more opportunity to score, tie, take the lead late in games. But, you know, I'm sure that's one of those things that the first 2-minute warning will hit week one and I'll be like, oh yeah, there's a 2-minute warning in college football now. And then I'll start to try and process how it's actually going to impact things going forward.
I'm actually for, honestly, both of them, but the 2-minute warning, I feel like that should, you know, make things just a little less chaotic at the end of games. I mean, to, like you said, essentially give a team another timeout. Let's call it the Stallion Statute with the helmets. You know, I feel like that's fitting. I think it was Kirby who came out and said, hey, we did not do this just because of the Michigan situation, which sort of feels like, you know, the t-shirt where you have more questions about what is addressed on this t-shirt. It's like, no, you're just leading to more questions by deciding to do this. But I think both things are sort of more about, you know, college becoming a little bit more like the professional level. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it, you know, especially when you look at quarterbacks, I would feel like that would help them getting used to having that helmet communication pre-snap. You know, we know that's in the NFL and that teams utilize that. But to me, I'm cool with both of these. I think I'm a little more excited about the 2-minute warning thing. I think it, you know, it's nice in the NFL, and it also will help us when you know, we're trying to ride at the buzzer and the clock's running. We get a little bit more time, which is always very helpful. Kip, do you have any thoughts on potentially seeing both of these rules put into place this upcoming season?
I mean, both good in theory. I think Kirby also brought up, which was my first thought reaction, is, you know, teams that run no huddle won't be able to, I mean, they're not going to be able to do it as far as, you know, the up-tempo. You know, you won't be able to run that out there like that. And also, I mean, I see it all the time. We see it in baseball and all the sports, but electronics fail. And, you know, you're going to see the guy tapping his helmet. He's not getting the call in. And I mean, you basically have to still practice the sign system because you have to be prepared for it to not work anymore. So at the same time, you're still going to have the guys on the sideline, because if not, I mean, like, that'll be the talk week one reaction. It failed toward the end of the game. They didn't have the signs on the sideline. It was pure chaos. And so it doesn't really change anything because you can't rely on it completely. So just like this 2-minute warning, sure. We're going to cut down our commercials, sure. I remember what happened when baseball games with the pitch clock. And I know that, you know, with the NFL, like, there's never going to be a point where we have less commercials. It's fewer commercials. It's not going to happen. I don't believe them. I get that's the hope, and I understand in theory, like, you're giving teams an opportunity to have more comebacks, which in theory results in better football games. Yeah, let's see if it stops the back-to-back timeouts. I think it's going to be the exact same. They'll find a way. I just think that the only way it improves is, you know, not going to commercial breaks during game-winning drives. You know, I just – the NFL style, I like how the announcers are just kind of discussing what the game plan would be for each team. I like whenever that – you know, you get a little bit more analysis on what each team's going to try to do during this possession change or during the 2-minute warning. But I just – I get it. Most rule changes have, you know, something, you know, a positive – public meaning behind them, but it's just the outcomes. I mean, we're talking about an organization that has just lost any faith whatsoever from the fan base, from the public. They haven't made a good decision. I feel like I don't know if Kirby was the head coach the last time that they changed something in college football for the better. I want games to get weird. That's whenever this sport emerges as the greatest in the world. So find a way, if you guys can do that in a shorter amount of time, go for it. I just think we're still going to have the same, if not more, commercials somehow.
I am very much, I hadn't really thought about this, Kip, until you brought it up, but I am very much looking forward to the first post-game press conference where someone blames helmet communication for why it unfolded at the end. That'll be a perfect college football moment.
I was going to say, are you telling me that, you know, we might see equipment go bad in Monroe, Louisiana, or Jonesboro, Arkansas, or San Marcos, Texas? Like, you don't believe, Kip, that the equipment is going to come through in some of these big Myrtle Beach, you know, Conway, South Carolina? You think Coastal Carolina can't rely on that stuff?
I'm waiting for it to happen, just Bobby Petrino. I mean, I'm not saying I want it to happen, anything bad to happen to Sam Pittman, but you know, I'm just waiting for that call not to go in and just to see what happens on the sideline. I mean, I'm sure it'll be very calm, not dramatic at all. You know, if he ends up, you know, in a neck brace again or just leaving in the middle of the night, I just think the only way to fix this at some point is the technology catches up and we just have basically iPads on the wrist. I mean, you just got to have just see everything right there. But hey, I'm here for it. It's just a new way for us to watch drama. So sign me up for that. I mean, I'm more excited than I was 3 minutes ago just thinking about all the ways this can go wrong. That's honestly the best part about it.
That is the true experience of a college football fan, and that's the right attitude. Let's see how this thing's going to go sideways. Before we get out of here, Georgia men's basketball minute, and oh boy, let's try to get these 60 seconds over with. Georgia has lost 9 of 10 since the last time we recorded. Two really tough losses. The first one last Tuesday at LSU, 67-66. I think you could argue there was a little bit of home cooking on some of the foul calls and non-foul calls at the end of that game. Definitely a tough loss. Georgia returned home on Saturday, played Texas A&M, and I think that might have been Georgia's worst game of the year. Lost 70-56, attempted a season-high 41 three-pointers and hit 10 of them. Mike White was very adamant after the game, and I thought was brutally honest about the lack of fight he saw in the second half. Georgia didn't score in about the last 6 minutes and 35 seconds of the game. Really feels like this season has just gone completely down the drain. Georgia is very much looking at being one of the four bottom seeds in the SEC tournament, which means they would play on that Wednesday night to open the conference tournament. Ben, I want to get your thoughts because I know you followed the team. You know, you're someone who used to go to a lot of games. Just from your perspective, what do you think has gone wrong with this team? It seemed like there was so much potential early in the season, and now they are fading down the stretch.
Well, I'm going to default to my recruiting philosophies on most things. I just think really Georgia's roster is not as good as everybody else's roster right now. I mean, you look at this, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on this. I think at LSU, when they lost to LSU was the only loss all year that Georgia lost as a favorite. So I think every other loss that they've had, they've been an underdog in most cases by, you know, 5+ points. I think they're losing the games that they should lose, and they're winning for the most part the games that they should win. The problem with that being most of the games in the back half of the SEC schedule were games that they were supposed to lose. And when you lose all of them, it doesn't look very good at the end of the year when you start looking at the record. I mean, I think it was one of those things early in the season. They won most of their non-con games. They were winning some of those earlier in the year. They did win as an underdog at South Carolina, which was really the surprise earlier in the year. And then I think they took Tennessee to the brink at home. And I think there was probably just some hope that, all right, this Georgia basketball team maybe is a little bit different than last year's team. I think, unfortunately, this year's team, albeit a little bit probably more talented, a lot of that talent was coming from guys that were freshmen, and I think you saw them hit some of their freshman wall midway through the season. So I think for Georgia, for Georgia to get where everyone wants it to be as a basketball program, they're going to have to do what Alabama has done and what Auburn has done and what Tennessee has done and accumulate top talent. They're going to have to recruit really well out of high school, which obviously they've done in this most recent recruiting class, at least with Asa Newell. And then you're going to have to hit on the transfer portal additions that you're going after. And that's not to say that they haven't landed some transfers that have been productive for them, but I think that from a talent standpoint, Dalton Connect is the best player in the league this year, and he was a transfer. And I think that, you know, Tennessee realized that bringing him from Northern Colorado, this is one of the best scorers in all of college basketball. And as you know, as a result, they went and they found him and they got him. And now he has turned into exactly what they thought that he was going to be. All of Georgia's transfers that they've taken have been more role fillers than difference makers. And I think that until you are bringing difference makers into the program, you're going to be playing second fiddle to most of these SEC basketball programs that are recruiting at a really, really high level. And so, you know, it seems simple. It seems boring. I know a lot of people are going to point to Mike White and say, oh, coaching this, coaching that, you know, whatever. You can only do so much. And I would argue the fact that Georgia has stolen a game on the road at South Carolina is a testament to Mike White as a coach. The fact that Georgia hasn't dropped a bunch of games where they've been favored is a testament to Mike White as a coach. But I think to win those games that you're not supposed to win, you really do have to have difference makers and just pure scorers. I mean, Georgia doesn't have really anybody that you can just count on to go get you 25 points on any given night like a lot of these other programs have right now. They've got some guys that can do it in certain spots, but they don't have anyone that's doing it on a consistent basis. And I think that until that changes, Georgia's basketball program is going to be sort of where it's at right now.
What a great explanation. I really figured that Ben was going to just keep it short and sweet, but no, he nailed it. And
I wanted to make it the men's basketball 5 minutes. You wanted it to be the shortest basketball minute of the year, and I was like, if that's what Jordan wants, we're dragging this thing out much longer than that.
UGA Hoops provided more than everyone expected. That's definitely the first time I've ever said that. They've got two games left. Ole Miss on Tuesday night, the night that we are recording this episode, and then at Auburn. I will be going to both those games, at Auburn games on Saturday, and then they'll be going to the SEC tournament, which they would need quite a run to even make the NIT, so it's going to be a very difficult stretch, no doubt. We're going to wrap up this episode. I appreciate Kip and Ben for popping on. Thanks to everyone who watched this live, everyone who is checking this out after the fact. Again, keep an eye out later this week. We're going to come back and do another episode, do our spring practice breakout players, do our draft, and see who we think is going to make some noise for the Bulldogs through spring practice. Be sure to go to dogs247.com, subscribe there, get on board. I believe we still have a 30% off deal going on right now for a VIP subscription. Also go to dogs247 on YouTube. We will have, starting next week, the Kirby Smart press conferences, the football player interviews. Still have Mike White press conferences and basketball player interviews as well. And all of these podcast episodes, you can also see those on YouTube. And also, go check us out on TikTok. We just launched that earlier this week, working on a few different videos to add, including some of the clips from this podcast. So, for Kip Adams and Benjamin Wolk, I am Jordan Hill. Until next time, take care, everybody.